Welcome back to the Capes and Tights podcast right here on capesandtights.com. I'm your host, Justin Soderberg. Once again, this episode is brought to you by our friends over at Galactic Comics and Collectibles at galacticcomicsandcollectibles.com. Now at 499 Hammond Street in Bangor, Maine. New location, so check them out if you're in the area. But this episode, we're here to chat with Alex Segura talking about Enemy of My Enemy, a Daredevil Marvel crime novel. Segura is a best-selling and award-winning author of novels such as Secret Identity, the sequel Alter Ego, Dark Space, he wrote with Rob Hart, Spider-Man 2099, Dark Tomorrow. We got Pete Fernandez series and so much more in the world of comics. He has written Star Wars, Dick Tracy, The Black Ghost, as well as many Marvel and DC comics. But today he is here to talk Enemy of My Enemy, a Marvel Daredevil crime book, which is available right now at your bookstores everywhere. But yeah, before you do, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, all those places. You can rate, review, subscribe over on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And as always, you can visit youtube.com for the video portion of this podcast. And don't forget to check out capesandtights.com for so much more. But this is author and comic book writer Alex Segura talking about his Daredevil book, Enemy of My Enemy. Enjoy, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast, Alex. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad we're here again. I said it before, but happy birthday. It's nice to celebrate birthday with some people around you. And now you get to celebrate on a podcast too, which is pretty cool.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Talk nerd out about some comics and some books and things like that here. But yeah, I mean, it's been a while since you've been on, so it's pretty kind of cool to talk about things. I want to jump into to Enemy of My Enemy, your new book coming out. But I also want to touch really quickly on things because you've been busy. This is not like you've been sitting around idle for the past couple of years. You've been doing like Dick Tracy. You did Green Hornet, Miss Fury. You obviously have done various Spider-Man and DC things. But you're doing Star Wars right now. Yeah, like you have done Star Wars stuff in the past. This is not your first foray into Star Wars, but you're the Star Wars person at this point right now, because you're the main line person. You took over for Charles, the reset of number one, here the next volume. The new volume is right here. So yeah, what's been like? What's it been like to write some Star Wars here now?
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy in a good way. The run just concluded with issue 10 of the main series. But before that, I did the 12-issue Battle of Jakku miniseries, which was basically 2 to 3 issues a month over 3 or 4 months. So it was kind of like expedited, but it was 3 4-issue miniseries. And then the main Star Wars book with Phil Noto and also Pete Woods and Luke Ross and Ramon Rosanas finishing up the run. To answer your question, it was great. It was amazing. You know, it was such a thrill to not only tell stories based. I kind of got both ends of the spectrum. Like with Battle of Jakku, I had to weave through so much established canon and so much lore to find the narrative for Luke, Leia, and Han during this very like important period, but that has, as recorded before that series, didn't really feature the core characters. And so the big ask was, well, what were Luke, Leia, and Han and all the beloved characters doing during this like really seismic moment? But that was a lot of dancing between the raindrops, whereas the main series with Phil, we had a lot of open space, no pun intended. Like, you know, after Return of the Jedi, there's a big quote unquote gap before you get into like Mandalorian, and then obviously before you get into the next trilogy of films. So it was really a question of like, well, after all these big epic battles of the first trilogy, like what's next? Like, what's to say? Like, you know, as Hamilton said, you know, war is easy, governing is hard. And so that was the big idea I took into the run. Like, what happens when they have to start putting their ideas and their hopes into practice? Like, you know, what happens when Leia actually has to govern, or when Luke actually has to decide his path as a Jedi, when Han has to realize I'm a dad and I'm working for somebody now, as opposed to just being a scoundrel on my own, flying around doing whatever I please. Like, I have responsibilities. Like, how do I grapple with that? And it was fun to weave in Baylert Valance, who I love as a character and is a great foil for Han. And the idea for me was like, what if I pair each of the core three, like Luke, Leia, Han, with another character that reflects them back? You know, like, so for Luke, it was Rin Zanat, who is a pilot with a mysterious past and a strange destiny that we kind of get to see roll out during the run. And for Han, it was Valance. And for Leia, in some ways, it was Mon Mothma, who is not what she was before, but kind of where she's heading as like this government official. And so that was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed playing with a little bit of the Lost Legend stuff, like the guy and that lore, but also tinkering with new villains like Reyna Oscure, who we created for in Battle of Jakku. And yeah, just kind of cutting loose with that and just telling a f I really tried to just evoke the films and have this feel like if there was two more movies, what would it be? If it was Battle of Jakku and this next arc as a film, like how would it play out? And you'd always wish you can play longer, but the market is what it is, and we had a nice run, and I'm happy and proud of it.
It's fun to see. I mean, I think there's two different types of Star Wars comic book readers. There's the ones that like read all of it. Doesn't matter what it is, the tales, the adventures, that whatever it may be, and then the ones that read the main story, like this, like that they just like stick to like, okay, I'm gonna read the one that just says Star Wars on it. And obviously, people have known your work from the Battle of Jakku and things like that, but now I actually get to see Alex Segura writing Star
Yeah,
Wars,
it was
like the actual
cool.
main, which is kind of cool. It's like one of those things, like a graduation thing. There's people who have written all kind of Yoda and other things, but they haven't written the main storyline. And it's pretty cool to see your name on that. I mean, writing Star Wars in general must be a pitch me moment in general. Like it must be something
It's
that's like a cool,
awesome.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when they told me I was working on the Jakku stuff, and I remember talking to my editors, Mark and Mikey, and just saying, hey, just let me know how I tee up the next person, because we knew we were doing Jakku into the ongoing. And just let me know if they want me to drop any plot, being a good citizen, like a good writing citizen, just like, well, let me know if you want me to like bake anything for them while they get going. And they said, well, it'll be easy because we're hoping it's going to be you. And that was really like one of the best, like we were on a Zoom call and I was like, oh, I need a minute to just like kind of sit with that. And it was pretty neat. Yeah. So yeah, it's an honor. It's a thrill. It's always cool to play in that space. Like I love Star Wars. I'm a big sci-fi guy. So, and just being additive and, the thrill is always like, will they take your ideas and play with them later on in comics or in other ways? And so I'm excited to see what those additions do to the lore. And yeah, so it's been cool.
It's funny because you can't be like, this is Alex, he's a Star Wars writer, or a Dick Tracy. Now you have
Or
all these names that are on your thing. It's like one of those things,
multi-hyphenate,
like exactly, you have all these like intellectual property or characters that people know, to that you're
Yeah,
still Dick
cool.
Tracy. You're what is it, 16, 17 issues of Dick Tracy in?
Yes, I'm writing eight. We're writing 18, so 16 is about to come out or
Yeah, come
just
out
came
right now.
out.
Yep. I think
Yeah.
it comes out soon. It's about to
Yeah, the
drop. I
St.
think it's
Patrick's
about
Day
to drop.
special just came out, and then 16. So that's a new arc. And the fun thing about Dick Tracy is I think people expect whenever new Dick Tracy stuff comes out, people expect it to be like a Chester Gould imitation or riff. And I think that's fine. And we love the Gould stuff. But for Michael Morosi and I, it was really, how do we take the elements of this character in this world that we love, but really kind of remix it and rework it so it still feels like the source material, but feels modern in terms of storytelling? So it's very much like the Casino Royale version of Dick Tracy, like reimagined a little bit. It's still a historical noir. It's still a hard-boiled mystery. Dick Tracy still does the things he does, and if you read those original strips, they're pretty brutal. Chester Gould did wasn't exactly like pulling his punches, so I think the violence and all that stuff is still there. It's just told in a more modern sensibility. We're not trying to imitate Chester Gould's style. Like Giraldo doesn't draw like Chester Gould at all. He draws much more like in a kind of Frank Miller Sin City style, which I think is beautiful and really well done. And so we tried to modernize it, and I think the response has been huge. I think everyone's really into it. The fact that we can have close to 20 issues, about 20 issues if you count the specials, in this day where everything's a mini series and everything gets rebooted after five is really a testament to people wanting that ongoing story. And we have subplots that have been simmering since issue one. We've been able to reintroduce a lot of the key lore, like the kid and a lot of the villains. And Tess Trueheart is one of my favorite characters to write in fiction. She's just like a little Lois Lane, a little Vicki Vale, but very much her own character. So yeah, we're having a blast. And I think this new arc is in many ways the culmination of everything. It's like everything we've been building towards. Like, whenever we go to a new A plot, like the blank was the big A plot for the second arc, we still had a lot of the simmering mob stuff spilling out from the first arc. And then the next arc three was very much espionage, Jean Le Carré, spy stuff, but we still had clues as to what was going on with the underworld, especially like the return of a very notable mob figure to the city. And so his that character's return incites a gang war that really blows up in this fourth arc, but also in many ways it's kind of like Dick Tracy born again. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but it's very much like what happens if everything Dick Tracy holds dear or assumes is going to be there forever isn't there, and can he like crawl his way out of it? And yeah, so Giraldo's killing it. Michael's a great collaborator. We're so lucky to have an amazing colorist in Mark Englert, and Pat Brousseau has joined us as a letterer, so that's been really cool.
It's just really cool to see. For some reason, when I went to look up, like I was like, "What issue are we on?" For some reason, I wanted to feel like it was like on issue like 30. Like I felt like it was been going on a lot longer. But I was like, "Wait
It
a second!
feels like it.
It's like this April, but 2 years since issue one came out of this run. You've had your specials and stuff like that. Maybe that's why it seems like it's a little bit longer. Like specials usually don't come out in the first 5 issues. Like it's usually a little later and things like that. So it's kind of cool. But like to see that and then like, see the St. Patrick's Day special and the Valentine's Day. That's kind of cool to see. And so yeah, I was pumped to see that it's actually still going and people are still buying it. And so I'm about I want to say 5 or 6 issues behind. I think I read the first 10 issues, and then
Okay,
there's just
cool.
so much stuff going on. But I have them. I
Yeah,
am ready to
no,
read. They're
it's a
stacked. They're ready to
blessing.
read. What did my buddy say? It's a shame pile. I had to come home to my shame pile, the pile of
Your
comics that
to
I need to
read
read.
pile, your to
Yes.
read pile, not a shame pile. Yeah, and the cool thing is that Mad Cave's been a great partner publishing wise because they've been doing the trades, they've obviously been doing these specials, but they're putting out these really nice deluxe editions, which I've never had in my career. I like to see my run like collected as a nice hardcover, so that's neat to see on the shelf. I just got a box of them this weekend, so that was a nice birthday present.
What is this heavy box?
Oh, it's me. Yeah, it's something I toiled over. Yeah, it's cool.
But it's just funny to see that. But I've read Secret Identity and Alter Ego, so you have your books you've
Thank
read,
you.
you have other books that go around those books as well. I was trying to talk to my brother. For some reason, I moved in May, and I'm still like, I bought a house. I'm still like finding boxes and things like that. And I was like, I couldn't find my Legendary Links trade because I was trying to explain to him about the connection, how cool it was that a Legendary Links
Oh,
comic book came out,
cool.
that it's like meta and all this other stuff, and I couldn't find it. I'm trying to explain it to him. I'm like, well, I don't need to show you it, but I can tell you it right now. And he was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I sent him home with both books and be like, read these books. And then when I
Awesome. I
find
hope he likes
Legendary
them.
Links, you'll be able to read that and go, this is pretty cool in that sense.
Yeah, people have asked me like what the best reading order is, and I mean it's really like what you make of it. Like I tend to think like read Secret Identity, then read the links, then read Alter Ego, but it might just be fun to read the two novels and the interstitials as you read and then go back and read the graphic novel. But it's kind of, I've also met people that read Alter Ego first and were like, this is such a great book, but I feel like there's more. And I'm like, yeah, it's part two, but it's okay. I wrote it as a standalone, so
Yeah,
you'll be fine.
and it was cool, and actually it was kind of cool because it was part of Alter Ego's part of now I can't think Aardvark the book series, which was really cool to see because that was really cool to see that Aardvark logo on it, which is cool because I think people probably stumbled upon it that way too, potentially of their Aardvark subscriptions and didn't realize there was a book also that came out before it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the market book novel publishing is outside of like work for hire and IP is you really are kind of dependent on the book clubs to help elevate your sales and your numbers because I think it's really hard to cut through the noise unless you have like a New York Times bestseller or you have something that really is on the Today Show or something. It's like a very book club driven industry, which is just how it is. It's and Aardvark is I think one of the better known ones in terms of like what they curate. So it sounds like it was an honor to be part of that.
Yeah, it's such a cool thing. When I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. Because I like the connection of obviously having you on the podcast, but also really liking it. And the book itself is like, it speaks to the deep comic book reader as well, because of the fact of how like it's a like inside baseball almost of comics and the industry itself. And so it's kind of funny, like you always want these books, like because I'm such a big comic book fan, I want these books about comics that are not really. It's not like I'm excited for it. I mean, I hope people are excited for An Enemy of My Enemy, the Daredevil
Oh, for
crime
sure.
novel. But like, I want that this was like cool because it's like not that. It's a different version of that. It's the story behind the story, but not really truthful story. It's like, it was just
Well,
this thing
you'd
that
be
you don't usually
surprised.
get. Yeah. You get them probably in other things like Inside Baseball. You might get those books about baseball like that. But like, comics wise, it was very rare to have that and that to read that was really cool.
It's very rare to see it like from a mainstream publisher. Like you obviously Tomorrow's does great stuff. There's a lot of like indie in the industry publishers that handle a lot of that stuff, but like Sean Howe's book or like there's a few like ones that are really great. The funniest thing is when Secret Identity came out, and I think I mentioned this to you, I got a lot of emails from people saying, I read the book and I really liked it, but then I went to my comic shop and I couldn't find the Lynx comic anywhere. And my My shop owner had no idea what I was talking about, and I feel like I'm crazy. And I'm like, you're not crazy. And this was before the Lynx comic came out. But now I can say the comic does exist. P.S. This is a work of fiction, but I'm glad it was so evocative that you want it to, we've manifested this thing into comic book history, kind of.
Now they can say it's here. It's still not real, but this is where this is the comic.
Yeah, I mean,
It's still based in fiction.
the trade is very clear. Like, this is
Yes.
wink, wink, Carmen Valdez and all these people doing it, but it's also written by Alex and drawn by Sandy. And so, we're not lying to anyone, but we are definitely letting you believe what you want to believe.
Oh, and I love the fact that it does exist, because the fact that I don't think that there's like a movie. I read books recently about a movie that was, haunted, and the movie was about the book was about the movie that was haunted, but the movie doesn't actually exist. So it would be cool to see more of that, where like the book's made instead of an adaptation of the book, adaptation of the movie that's in the book, and put that on screen and say that's what we're gonna make the movie about, or the comic book about, or whatever.
My buddy Alejandro Arbona did something similar, Lake Yellowwood Slaughter, which was it's a comic book adaptation, and Gavin Guidry, I hope I'm not mispronouncing his last name, he's doing The Flash with Ryan North, but Lake Yellowwood Slaughter is a ad comic book adaptation of a slasher film that obviously never existed, but it's really fun. Yeah, it's neat that also plays in like that meta space.
Yes, that space that's like you want it to be real, but it's actually not real. It's fiction, but still reads the way that it's like based on a true story. It's really cool. But yeah, so I've read the stuff. Like you obviously, like I said, Spider-Man stuff you've done. You've done some Marvel stuff. You've done some DC stuff. But now you get to join the ranks of Marvel in prose form as well. You've had Marvel Comics. Now you have Marvel Prose. And with Enemy of My Enemy, a Daredevil crime. And I actually did some Googling on this. This is the first time you've actually been able to write the character Daredevil, right? You haven't written Daredevil in like a character in a panel somewhere or something
I
like that,
have
I don't
not.
think.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to write Daredevil. So, I mean, I am a huge Daredevil fan. I've written, well, we'll talk about it, but the irony of while I was writing the novel, I got to write the illustrated history around the same time. So it's been a very Daredevil-centric 12 months, to say the least,
You've been dive right into Daredevil.
which is good. Like, I mean,
Yeah.
there's definitely nothing to complain about.
But this book is the second book. And it's one of the things that I appreciated the most of this Marvel Crime series thing is that it is, you mentioned people reading Secret or Alter Ego and then reading Secret Identity. It's like you can read March 24th, you could read Enemy of My Enemy, and then go back and read Lisa Jewell's Jessica Jones book. Like it's not like you have to read them in order. They're based in the same crime universe. I mean, all of it's based in Marvel Universe, but like it's based in the same place, but not like they're not like, oh, Daredevil's not like being like, hey, Jessica, how's it going? Like they're not talking through it. You don't need to know the other one to know the other one. It seems.
Yeah, I mean, it is a series in that Lisa Jewell's book leads into mine, but they're very different tonally. There's no homework required. Like, without spoiling anything, my book in some ways sets up S.A. Cosby's Luke Cage book. But if you don't read my book, which you should, but if you don't, you'll be fine understanding Sean's in the same way that you don't have to have read Lisa's to read mine. But we did all get together and kind of talk it out and carve out little spaces. Jessica Jones shows up in my book. I know she's a factor in the Luke Cage book, obviously, but it's also not the kind of thing where you're going to be missing something by not reading the others. So they're all standalones. They're all tonally very different, but they're in the same universe. And the prose stuff does happen outside of standard comic continuity, and it's not in the continuity of the shows. It's its own little thing, but I tried really hard to evoke the comics in the prose. And hopefully you saw that as you read it.
Yes. I guess that was my point. The point about like it's not like you need prior knowledge to read this book. You can read if you're a Daredevil fan, you can read just this book and be okay. If you're a Jessica Jones book fan, same thing, and the same with the Luke Cage with S.A. Cosby's, as you can get that out of it, which is good, which is smart in a sense that you don't want to make it so people have to read all of it to get the information they want, and so on and so forth. But like it's a, I mean, I'm a big fan of yours, so that was huge. I'm a big fan of Daredevil, so that was huge. But I liked Lisa Jewell so much that it was like a must read to read this one. Whether or not you were attached to it or whatever, that was so good that this made it must read information. And then this is now must read for S.A. Cosby's. So it's like one of those things that I'm like, it's like they build off of each other, but not in the way that you'd think they build off each other. They're just so good and they're so, I don't say unique, but their own standalone thing. It's like, it's not, if you like all the other stuff, you're going to like this, but like, it's just this, like, I'm glad it exists in the form that it exists. Like, this story would have been good on TV or it would have been good in comics, but I like the fact that it exists in this format, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was Daredevil was one of my favorite Marvel characters. I was a big Spider-Man, X-Men, Daredevil guy. And what I loved about Daredevil is that his life felt much messier than much more complicated. Peter Parker's life is complicated, and the X-Men are definitely living a challenging situation, but it seems like Daredevil was much more grounded and lived very much like in the gray areas of things. His choice decisions were always very complicated. And what I loved is that while he had these amazing powers, his stories did feel very noir and very hard boiled and very much like a crime story. It's no Miller has made no secret of his affection for like Dashiell Hammett and film noir while crafting his iconic Daredevil run. So to get a chance, when I realized this was happening, the first thing I did was make a list of all the elements of an essential Daredevil story, like the things that I needed as a fan to feel like something was important or as a key Daredevil moment. And so it was stuff like Ben Urich, Elektra, The Hand, Kingpin, Punisher, New York City, Hell's Kitchen, Catholic guilt, messy relationships, Foggy Nelson, Matt as a lawyer. Matt's done a lot of different things. He's been a prosecutor, he's been disbarred. And I really wanted it to be in conversation with two of my favorite Daredevil stories, which will not surprise you: Born Again, the Miller Mazzucchelli deconstruction of Daredevil, and Fall of the Kingpin, which in many ways is the other side of that coin. And I think really underrated. It's Dan Chichester and Lee Weeks, who's a fantastic artist. And so if you read those two and then read Enemy of My Enemy, you'll feel like, okay, they're all kind of dancing around each other. But I wanted it to also serve as a real introduction to people that aren't familiar with Daredevil, who might know it from seeing a poster and walking around, or maybe seen a few episodes of the show or read a few comics years ago, but don't have a doctorate, that you can come into this novel knowing nothing and you get brought up to speed, hopefully immediately. On the flip side, for people like us who are like hardcore, who do have a doctorate in Daredevil, there's a ton of Easter eggs and things like that. There's a lot of obscure characters that hopefully people will be like, oh my God, he pulled that out. Or, like obscure villains, obscure supporting cast members, a few fun like cameos, like Dakota North shows up. And I love Dakota North. I think she's a fantastic character. And she's part of Daredevil's world and they have a history together and it's messy. And hope I really hope the twist lands. The people that have read it and gotten to the end were surprised, and so I'm hoping that that pays off for readers.
You've obviously written novels. We mentioned that you've written comic books. Do you think that you had the ability with this, because it was a prose novel and it was longer, that you have the ability to add those cameos and those lesser known characters? That's a little bit harder to do in a 5 or 10 issue miniseries in comics. Like, this is like a place where you had that ability because it was a little bit more expanded and had some more room for it.
I wouldn't say so much about the cameos. Like the cameos, I think you could probably do in comics. Not to undercut your question, I think it's more just you spend more time in Matt's head, in a way that you really can't in comics because it's all so visual. You don't want to cover the artist's work with 1,000 captions, but in prose, it's an internal monologue. You're in Matt's head for a few chapters. We're in Elektra's head when Matt's out of commission, and so it's an rare opportunity to see what they're thinking beyond the surface level and what their motivations are and how complicated their lives can be. But in terms of the breathing room of the story, like with a novel, you just have more space. I think the way comics are set up now is you get your 5 issues, hopefully you get 5 more, but it's very much building on, the arcs are tighter, and so you don't have that room to take little deviations or subplots. But there's a ton of stuff in there for folks like us who know the lore. But I also was trying to be super mindful of people that don't know who Ben Urich is, and how do we explain who Ben Urich is in a page and a half without making it feel like a Wikipedia page? You want it to feel like I'm a real firm believer in character through action. So I show you who they are by what they're doing, as opposed to I'm Matt Murdock and this is what I do, rat-a-tat-tat-tat. Like, it's more about you're seeing him. We open in a court scene, and I think the first line is you could hear a pin drop, and probably the only person that could hear that pin drop is Matt Murdock, because he's Daredevil and this is his story. And you roll into a little bit of the origin, and then you just show him in action. You show him listening to the jurors, you show him listening to the defense attorney, and you already realize this guy is a lawyer and obviously very much believes in justice, but he is blurring the lines by kind of violating a lot of tenets of being an officer of the court. You know, if you can listen to what the defense attorney say or the prosecution saying while you're a defense attorney, that's got to be some kind of breach. But he's doing it because he's doing it for the better, you know, better reasons. You know, he's decided that his reasons make more sense. And that's the big question of the book. Like, at what point is the line drawn? Like, the Punisher has the same logic. Like, he kills people because he thinks he's right. And the Kingpin breaks laws because he thinks it's for the best of himself. And so, and I think one of the questions I asked myself is like, what is the most challenging situation I could put Matt in? And that was, well, what if he has to defend the killer of his worst enemy? And that killer is Frank, or is allegedly Frank Castle. You know, and at one point, Matt's like, well, I would be very, and he feels bad about this, you know, I would be very happy if Frank is sent away and the Kingpin were gone, because then two major problems that I have to grapple with all the time are off the grid. But I think the book is about his journey realizing that despite those feelings and the shame that comes with those feelings, he has to do what's right. And then he decides I have to defend the Punisher because he's not going to get a fair trial. And even Frank Castle, a serial murderer and, you know, vigilante, deserves justice. And then it goes from there. And obviously, there's a gang war breaking out because when the Kingpin's gone, all the rats come out and start fighting over the scraps. And that's where you see a lot of the cameos. You see a lot of fun underworld, Marvel underworld figures. Like, I'm still surprised we got Silvermane in there. So.
Well, it's you get to pull those things out, and you know, there's like David Harper from Off Panel Podcast always like excited to see Stiltman in comic books. It's like if someone could put Stiltman in, I'm so excited. It's like there's definitely people who are fans of these characters. Silvermane fans are like, oh my God, how did this happen? And like I said, it's one of those things. If it takes up, you know, you impactful real estate in a panel of a comic book and do a story on that, and it's only going to sell a comic or two extra, it's not gonna be big for someone to be like, yeah, let's do this. Like, let's make sure you focus on the big people. Punisher, you want Daredevil and Kingpin to be on most of these pages, Elektra, and so on. So it was really cool to see that. Plus, I think that again, a book that's about Daredevil is most of the people that are gonna pick it up are fans of Daredevil. Like, this is not gonna be someone who's like, I've never heard of Daredevil and I'm gonna pick up a
Well, you never know. I
novel.
mean, you have to write it.
Hopefully,
Yeah.
I
The
mean, but
hope
I
is
also,
that,
yeah, go ahead.
no, I think the hope is obviously, you know, it's coming out the same day the show premieres, so the awareness will be high. And the hope is that folks that are aware of the character and the world surface level will want to learn more. And so this book is, I wrote it as a primer to the key elements of Daredevil. Like, if you like this book, you'll probably like stuff like the Bendis run or the Brubaker run, and you want to get pulled into the comics and the source material or the show. And so it all kind of plays off each other.
In my hope for success of people that I appreciate and respect, like yourself, I hope that the TV show is what helps propel people into something like this, and then maybe they're picking up those runs, like you mentioned, because I think that like you do have the benefit of all of you, Lisa, and SA Cause, we all have the benefit of these have been on screen somewhere, so people can pick up, even if that's the only knowledge they have of the character, but they don't read comic books, but they like to watch TV shows and like to read novels. This is exactly the place for them, because the fact that I've seen Daredevil, cool, I know exactly a little bit about who the character is, and I can go into this. And you said it, you did, you mentioned earlier, you set it up in a way that people don't have to have like the encyclopedia of Daredevil in front of them to understand what's going on in this book. And then
But if you
also,
need
like,
it, I wrote it.
it's yeah, there you go, there is something for you. No, and it's street level. That's the big thing for me. I think everybody has those questions, like, what the hell happens when the Avengers destroy New York City? Like, what's the repercussions of that? What's the repercussions? But then we also realize that, like, one of the benefits I loved about the Netflix TV show with Daredevil was the fact that he didn't have, spoiler alert to anybody, he didn't really have his costume that was like his costume until the very last episode. Like, he didn't get called Daredevil really until like the very last episode. Like, it was just him. If you have superpowers or you have the ability to fight crime better than someone else, you would just do that. It's not like you'd immediately be like, cool, I have these superpowers now. Let's go in the office. Let's brainstorm some names for myself. Let's figure out a costume and then I'll go fight crime. It was like
Yeah, it
there's
was very
this,
grounded.
it's grounded, and that's what this is. And I think that street level, gritty, what do these people do to protect their own neighborhood? I just read Tony Fleece's The Thing run, his five issue miniseries about Yancey Street, and it was like, you always see Fantastic Four like fighting other godly things or the negative zone or like protecting New York City or whatever. But very rarely do you see them like protecting, like the thing being like, I'm gonna help protect my neighbor. And seeing that to be like, yeah, that's what would happen because there can't always be attacks from these bigger beings. They're smaller attacks. And I think that that's what this is. And there's also, like I said, the courthouse part of it has to be brought into it, the legal part of it. And so figuring out a way to tell a story that's grounded in street level, but also big enough that it feels impactful enough. Like I said, Kingpin, like you mentioned, Kingpin being murdered, is having this thing and having it be Frank Castle. There's just so much into it. And I was reading it along and I'm like thinking about the different things that are going on. I'm like, my mind was just going like I said, thinking about how someone would have to defend someone they don't like, who kills someone they don't like. And
Right,
it's like,
yeah,
it's
it's like,
just,
what do you do?
it's like a mind crazy thing. 'Cause like, to me, I'm like, yeah, let him rot. Like, just let him rot. Cool. Who cares? One's
Yeah,
dead.
I mean,
Let him
that's a
rot.
challenge.
And
I think
how?
that's the related. Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's in my mind went to the stupid thing. Like, how is it even possible in comic books or Marvel, I should say, to defend how a quarter of your peers that don't or that are like honest? Because like, the Punisher has killed so many people and been done so many bad things in the name of potential justice because he thinks that's what's going the right thing to do. But like, how do you pick a group of people, peers that like weren't going to be like, yeah, you killed a bunch of people, like you should go to jail, whether you killed this person or not? How are you going to get that?
Yeah, I don't know. I
Like,
mean,
it's
it's
almost
also like
impossible.
it's inherently flawed too when the person defending you is
Yes.
Daredevil. Like, and
Yes.
that's you don't know that, so it complicates the situation. But yeah, I think the core story is Matt grappling with that question. Like, I could just shrug and let these people go into the void and move on with my life and for the better, but it's about his sense of justice and also how he gets to that sense of justice and sometimes the bad choices that take him there. It is a mystery, and it is a mystery that hopefully pays off at the end, and that readers are satisfied with the twist and how it culminates. And then, it leads you, if you want to keep reading, it'll lead you to Sean's book, and that's a blast too. I've gotten to read that as well. So it's really an honor to be among these two like writing titans.
It was cool because I saw Lisa. I'm a fan of Lisa Jules. Lisa Jules is a fantastic author and writer. And when I saw that Lisa was doing a Jessica Jones story, I was like, this is fantastic. And then in that, I think that first like, either press release or on Amazon or something, it said you were doing one of them. And I don't even know at that moment if S.A. Cosby had the
Yeah, I think they
announcement on
announced
that.
us
It was right
together.
around that same time. It might have been in there just saying like this book's coming from you or whatever. Maybe there wasn't attached, whatever it was. But I was excited because I was like I said, I was so much of a fan of that Netflix stuff and that grounded the Defenders and all that stuff. Like it was like I want more of that. And the way to expand that and get into more people's hands and is bringing different formats to people. And I think the format of a prose novel just makes it a little bit easier to, again, I know people who will read this who do not read comic books, but are excited
Yeah, it's a
to get
different
into it.
audience. I mean,
It's
there's definitely some overlap. The Venn diagram has some overlap, but there's people that will come because they know us from the novel space, and that's the hope, is to activate new readers and bring them into this world and show them how cool this character is and how cool a supporting cast is. Because I got to play with, Elektra was there, Foggy Nelson's there. In this continuity, which is a little, he's a little more closer to comics, Karen Page is gone. And so there's a lot of grief from Matt grappling with that and the fallout and the guilt of like starting a new relationship after Karen's death and how does that work? And I was lucky that, Brian Bendis got to read the book and said some very nice things about it. And so that's what you feel like you've been blessed. Like, the people that actually wrote the comic and that I read as a fan approved of the book. And I think it's very much in conversation with Annie Nesenti's run, obviously Frank Miller, anyone that writes Daredevil is talking to Frank Miller in some way. But Andy Nesenti, Dan Chichester, Bendis, Brubaker, a little bit of Charles Soule and Mark. I love the Wade run. Daredevil is one of those characters that's been universally blessed in terms of the writers that have gotten to writers and artists, the creative people that have gotten to work on the book. So there's no shortage of like great comics to read. So hopefully the novel will bring people into the world and there's plenty of stuff for them to enjoy.
I'm hoping also, just as a fan of comic books, that people do this, read, watch the show, so on and so forth. But also, I mean, Stephanie Phillips' new run's coming as well next month. So it's like, hopefully, it feeds into people wanting to read more Daredevil and pick up a comic book. Because I'm always the same way, the opposite way, being that, like, if an author writes a comic, hopefully they read the comic and reads the books. Because a lot of the people that I like that cross over in this stuff do great job at both of them. And so I'm wanting people to read all of the stuff. Get it all, read it all.
Yeah, and I think Stephanie's great, but also Lee Garbutt's an amazing
Yes,
artist
yes.
and has done so much great stuff, and I think he's really been building to this Daredevil run. Like, his Daredevil feels very like John Buscema and very kinetic in how he draws him. So I'm excited for people to people who aren't aware of Lee's art to get turned on to how good he is.
I mean, you've written Marvel Comics quickly. Do you was this a different experience interacting with Marvel when writing this? Was there a little bit more parameters, less parameters to go around? Were there like characters you couldn't use or could use or had to do something a certain way, or was it a little bit more freedom?
Since it's in its own continuity, it's less about like, oh, well, we have black tarantulas over here now. We can't use them because they're over here. Or it was less like horse trading for characters. It was more like this is its own little continuity, but you obviously didn't want it to feel completely different from what folks are familiar with. So I think there was, we tried to be consistent, but not completely, it doesn't feel like it's tied into like Steph and Lee's run. That's the current Daredevil stuff. This feels a little more outside of that continuity and a little bit more like Daredevil 101. Like people, this is like prime Daredevil. Like Daredevil's a defense attorney in sharing a business with Foggy. Elektra's his ex-girlfriend who came back to life. It's still complicated, but it's not the same kind of complications as right now.
That's cool. I love that. I love that all. So, to me, it was a huge thing. I think that having the ability to be able to write a book about Daredevil, but then you having to write the illustrate. What did you say? What was the call title of the other thing you're doing with
The
Daredevil?
Illustrated History, yeah.
Yeah. So like, it's not like now you're living in Daredevil. Now you are Alex Segura, Daredevil writer. Like,
Daredevil expert, yeah.
yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because it came together. I had gotten the novel, I was working on the novel, and then Insight reached out. Now, obviously, it was the thought was, well, he's doing this, so why not do this as well? And so I was already reading every Daredevil issue again, reading some new stuff that I hadn't read. Like pre-Miller, I needed, I had a, I my knowledge wasn't complete of the pre-Miller stuff, but I'd read obviously everything from Frank Miller on a few times, and so I went back and read everything again, and that helped inform the novel and the history. But the cool thing about the Illustrated History is that I got to interview all the key players like Bendis, Brubaker, Zdarsky, Charles Soule, Mark Waid, everybody, Andy Nascenti, Dan Chichester, even Greg Wright, people that contributed to the character, Mark Waid. I said Waid already, but everybody. And so the cool thing about that is that you're working on Daredevil, a new Daredevil story, while hearing from all these iconic writers what they brought to the table. And that was really inspirational and helpful. Like it really put it into context. And I think everyone coming into writing Daredevil was like, who, me? You want me to write Daredevil? So there's a sense of like the history and the weight of the character, and that made me feel a little less alone because I definitely had those feelings when I got the gig.
Do you want to write more Daredevil?
I'd love to, yeah. I'm enjoying what Steph and Lee are doing, so I don't want to
Yes.
step on any toes, but
No, exactly. Actually, but you also know for a fact, like for a fact, in these modern days, like they're not going to get 150 issues of this thing. So there's going to be an
I
opening at
hope
some
so.
point. I hope they do too, but I'm just saying, like, it's just the way it is. So there might be an opening at some point for a Daredevil comic, and if they do, I mean, maybe they'll give you a call. Who knows?
Sure, yeah,
Who knows?
I'd be happy. I love Daredevil. I mean, I love a lot of Marvel's characters, and they know that, so.
Are you writing anything else novel wise? You don't have to say anything about it, but are you like is it comics? Are you doing both still? Is it still like a little bit of dipping toes in each segment or?
I'm working on my next crime novel. I'm finishing up the first draft, which is, I guess the high concept is Godfather meets All the President's Men, like a journalist uncovers connections between a political candidate and organized crime as the streets of Miami are kind of engulfed by a gang war. And so she's got to figure out how to solve this case while saving the city, basically. And so it's a kind of a love letter to those 70s movies that I like, with a modern twist. And that's been fun. And I'm working on a horror novel for Simon and Schuster after that.
Nice. That's awesome. I'm so excited for that because, like I said, I've read most of your stuff. I mean, I read your Bruno book. I read everything, man. There's like this.
Thank
There's
you.
a there's a,
Yeah.
there's a bunch of stuff out there. You and Rob Hart did some
Yeah.
great stuff. I'm excited for people to read "Enemy of My Enemy," coming out March 24th at a bookstore near you and bookstores everywhere. And so I think this episode is actually dropping on the 25th. So it's in your
Awesome.
bookstore
Yeah,
right
pick it up
now.
today.
Go get it. Pick it up. Grab while you're there, ask them to find the Lisa Jewell Jessica Jones book at the same time. And then I don't know if you can pre-order Truth of Power yet, but if you can,
Yeah, I
have
think
them
it's up for pre-order. Yeah.
pre-order
I
S.A.
like them
Cosby's
all.
too, and get the whole kit and caboodle there and have the Marvel Crime series on your bookshelf and read all those. But also you have all kinds of trades out there. You got Dick Tracy. You got the Green Hornet, Miss Fury stuff. You've got Star Wars, obviously. We just mentioned as well. Yeah, I appreciate all you do and everything that you're doing here. I appreciate you
Always
taking the
happy to
time out
be
to talk
here.
to us. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here and you ask great questions. And so, yeah, pick up Enemy of My Enemy when you can. And thanks so much.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Alex. Yeah, Enemy of My Enemy at your bookstores everywhere right now. Go grab it. But thanks again. Until the next time, we'll talk to you later, Alex.
Thanks so much.